Hello, I'm John Wilson. Thank you for downloading this edition of Master Tapes from BBC Radio 4. Hello and welcome to Master Tapes. That's Natalie Merchant performing Wonder for our audience here at the BBC Maydevale Studios. In the first part of this programme, Natalie discussed the making of the 1995 album Tiger Lily, the first record she made after leaving the band 10,000 Maniacs. It included tracks such as Carnival, Beloved Wife and San Andreas Fault.
San Andreas.
Now it's the turn of our studio audience to ask the questions, not just about Tiger Lily, but about the rest of her repertoire and creative life. And we'll have more live music from Natalie too. Before we get the questions, most of the people here at Maydevale are long-time fans of yours. And of course, every artist values the fans. But how much are you writing with these people in mind?
Sorry to say. Most of the time I'm not, but sometimes I am. I'm directly targeting them. Millions of people might potentially hear this. Is there something I'd like to impart? And I do sometimes.
Well, let's get the first question from the audience. It comes from Diane Watson, who's a textile and fashion lecturer from Hartlepool in the northeast of England, from where she's come today with her daughter, Diane.
My daughter's been listening to your music since she was born. May even have been on in the delivery room. What did your mother... I can't remember. What did your mother play you and how has it influenced your musical style?
Petula Clark was probably the most important artist to my mother when I was a little girl. And therefore, I listened to Petula Clark and I idolized her. I loved her little miniskirts and her fishnet stockings and her teased-up hair and her beautiful voice and her big orchestral arrangements and the horns. My love is... I loved it. And my mother used to write really philosophical little comments on the backs of the albums.
And did she pass those records on to you and say, you have to listen to these, you have to learn these?
I stole them, eventually. Where are my Petula? I don't know.
Was she like that about other artists or just Pet in particular?
No, my mother, when she was probably in her late 20s, she went to college because she had had lots of children out of high school and she really wanted to go to college. And then she discovered symphonic music and she stopped listening to pop music.
And Diane, you say you were always playing Natalie's music and you've got your daughter with you here today. Let me just ask your daughter, in fact, let me put her on the spot. Did you mind your mum playing you all of these 10,000 Maniacs and Natalie Merchant records?
She played worse.
for example, she's got my sense of humour.
But Diane, you thought it was important to pass on.
I want to know what was worse. I want to know on a scale of 1 to 10.
We better not have a row, had we?
Let's move on. Awkward family situation developing in Maydevale 3. Guy Jones has our next question. He's an electrical engineer from Braintree in Essex. Where's Guy?
You once said that Carnival was written about the awe you felt when you first visited New York in your early teens.
Didn't say that.
You said it in the first part of this programme, funnily enough.
Yes, I did say that.
But you presumably didn't write it until Tiger Lily.
Well, I think the response was the same, and it still is. Actually, I was there last week, and I have the same response. So I could have written it last week.
So it's a song of joy and wonder. But, I mean, it's a song that, unfortunately, just without dampening the mood here, it has horrific connotations, this song as well, doesn't
Carnival?
It? Yeah, because it was supposedly chosen by the serial killer Eileen Wuornos.
Oh, I forget about that.
You don't want to talk about that at all.
Well, it's interesting, little side.
Well, we should just explain it was chosen by her.
Yeah, now
to
that
be played
you've
at
brought
her,
it up, you better
to be played
explain
at her funeral
it
after she was executed.
I don't remember who is the filmmaker. Nick Broomfield.
He made a documentary film about her.
Yes,
The Selling of a Serial Killer, and used the song in the play out over the credits at the end of the film.
He did, and he approached me through mail several times to ask if he could use the song, and I said no, I don't really want my song associated with a serial killer, and then I finally read beyond the first paragraph, and he said that actually she was a passionate fan, that she listened to me kind of obsessively on death row, and that Carnival was played at her request at her funeral. And that's when I said, okay, you can use it because it belongs there in some way.
Yeah.
And it also made me realize when you're a recording artist, your music goes out into the world and you don't know whose hands it ends up in. She had a really troubled life, from what I understand. And if it brought her comfort when she was sentenced to death, I guess that's a good thing that I did. I think of the song's pretty dark.
I've walked these streets, but you stayed. You seem to me make up on their faces. Actors took their places next to me. But I've walked these streets in a carnival of sights to see. All the cheap thrill seekers, all the vendors, all the dealers, they crowded around me. Have I been blind? Have I been lost inside myself and my own mind? Hypnotized, mesmerized by what my eyes have seen. As I've walked these streets in a spectacle of wealth and poverty, in the diamond market, scarlet welcome carpet, they just rolled out for me. And I've walked these streets in the madhouse, as silent they can be. The wild-eyed misfit prophet on a traffic island stopped, and he raved of saving me. Have I been blind? Have I been lost inside myself and my own mind? Hypnotized, paralyzed, when my eyes are found. Is that good?
That's great. Is that nice? And you're right, there's a lot of darkness in that song. I mean, on the record, the production of the record, there's quite a funky backbeat, and it's moving along at a pace.
And that incredible guitar lick.
And the fantastic guitar lick throughout. But you strip it down to those chords, and it takes on a whole new texture. Mm-hmm. And the lights come down. Mm-hmm. Let's move on again. Our next question is from Adam Cox.
You've long been involved with various political causes, from John Kerry's presidential bid to efforts to block fracking. In your songwriting, do you ever set out to write overtly political songs, or do you consciously try to avoid that and just let politics and ideas about social justice simply work their way through the process?
I don't know if I've ever written a song that was overtly about a particular political event or character in politics, but definitely covertly all the time. Because as I said before, I'm always assessing power.
But you're not a polemical songwriter at all. And I think Michael Stipe, who you were closely associated with, you toured with REM, and you went out together for a while back in the day, when he credits you
allegedly.
Allegedly. He says you politicised him and you were responsible for that space of very overtly political REM records in the early 90s.
And he told me not to sell my publishing.
Oh, that was wise advice.
That was the best advice ever.
So you retained the rights to everything.
So I politicized him and he made me a very wealthy woman.
Steve Fowles has our next question. We're going to move on again. Steve Fowles has our next question. He's a postman from Cheltenham in Gloucestershire. He came here today straight from doing his rounds. There is a song on Tiger Lily called The Letter, isn't there, of course, but you don't want to talk about that one.
No, I don't.
I know how to play that one, though.
That's not a cue, Natalie. He has a question for you.
When I was looking on the internet for Christy Moore's cover of Motherland, I found quite a few clips of Irishmen covering his version of your song. How do you feel to be part of the Irish tradition?
I feel honoured. I really do. And Christy's version of it is incredible.
Yeah.
And I saw him once play live in Lisdún Verna.
Oh.
Not the festival. I went to Lisdún Verna at a vegetarian B&B, and they were telling me about the festival. and about Christy. And they said, oh, but Christy's been sick. He hasn't done a gig in years. And we walked down the street, walked into a pub, and there he is, playing Liz Dunverna, in Liz Dunverna. And I think Ireland has always been that place for me when I'm there. I have these incredible coincidental experiences, like running into Paddy Maloney.
Of the Chieftains.
I did. I bumped into him. I was not intending to be where I was at the time. And I walked in and he went, Natalie Merchant, I've been looking for you. I swear to God. An hour south of Dublin, I stopped to go to the bathroom. I wasn't going in there for any other reason. Pa, Natalie Merchant, I've been looking for you.
And Paddy Maloney in a pub just south of Dublin, that's not a great surprise. But he had actually been looking for you.
Yeah.
Because he was looking to, oh, you work with the Chieftains.
I'm doing an album called Tears of Stone. Would you like to sing on it? And I said, sure. He said, oh, right then. What are you doing tomorrow? It was great. So anyway, I forgot your question, but weren't those two good stories?
Yeah. It's about being part of the Irish tradition. About
yeah, that. I would love, when I'm dead and gone, that people think Motherland is a folk song.
That Motherland, that's the title track of an album from 2001, and there's an interesting story behind that, because this is an album that came out just after the September the 11th attacks on America. The sound of the record, and lyrically, it seems to be addressing a situation, particularly the opening track, This House is on Fire, in which you actually sing the line, I don't have the gift of prophecy, but then describe a world of chaos and confusion and violence.
And not many people heard that record. It was a record that was very critical. And that wasn't safe to be for a long time. Mm. And there was a song called St. Judas that, saddle up the horses and wear your Sunday best. Sing your sacred harp, you be holier than the rest. Fill up the room with a grand and a thunderous song, lady. Rattle out the windows, let it spill out on the lawn as you shout. Shout your praises to the man who kissed the Lord, to your backstabbing brother that betrayed all of this world, your Judas. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And I had Mavis Staples singing on it. St. Judas was about an exhibition of original photographs of lynchings that I saw at the New York Historical Society. And there were actually people grinning underneath the bodies of their victims. And it was so disturbing, but like I said, it wasn't the right moment to be critical of our past or of our present.
We'll move on again. Next question comes from Sarah Ganfield, who's a youth worker from Plymouth who has travelled here today to see you and says she loves the way you tell stories in song. Sarah.
You took part in the first Lilith Fair tours in the late 90s, which featured only women artists. Do you think a festival celebrating women in music would generate the same interest nowadays?
I don't know. What do you think?
I'd like to think it would, but I don't think it would.
But you don't think it would?
No.
Why was it important at the time?
And it was
why
a great time. Yeah. There's so many incredible artists. And I got to spend time with Queen Latifah and Bonnie Raitt and Sinead O'Connor. And the list just went on and on. Because I was on the whole, I was sort of the secret partner. I was co-headliner, but nobody knew that. So I was 62 dates in 69 days. It was the most brutal tour I'd ever, but it was fun because the women were so mutually supportive, like Emmylou Harris. But I remember Bonnie Raitt telling me, she said, it's a man's world. It's been a man's world ever since I started this. And you don't know what it feels like to me to be surrounded by women on stage, backstage, in the audience. She thought it was incredible. That's the thing that people don't realize, is it was just fun.
It was around this time that you recorded the album Ophelia, on which I think there were a lot of female character studies. You were evoking a sense of telling stories about strong women. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can play one of the songs from that album.
Maybe I could. Ophelia was a bride of God. That sounds nice a cappella, doesn't it? Ophelia was a bride of God, another's come alive. In sister cells, the cloister bells tolled on a wedding night. And Ophelia was a rebel girl in blue, stuck in suffragette, who remedied society between her cigarettes. And Ophelia was a demigoddess in pre-war Babylon. I can't remember.
That was a good memory to have.
That's pretty good.
I haven't sung that in years.
But looking at you there, as you're sitting there remembering, trying to remember those
I'm
words.
I'm double-tasking while looking for...
while leafing your way through the lyric book. Does that suggest the lyrics are very much hardwired in?
They certainly are.
So if I threw any title at you, you would be able to give some...
Any pop song ever written. I'm a living, breathing Spotify.
Right, okay.
Come on, challenge me. What do you got?
I'm going to give this challenge to our next questioner, who is Louise Searle. Louise says she's been a fan of yours ever since she saw 10,000 Maniacs play live when she was 16.
Louise, any pop song?
Okay.
Come on, any pop song before your question.
Birdie Cries.
That's not a pop song.
It is a pop. To me, it's a pop song. Go on.
Louise, give us the question in the context of why you're asking for that song.
The reason I'm asking for that song is I first saw you back in 1988 in London, and I think you kind of finished with that song. Uh-huh. And
we should just explain, this is the last song on the In My Tribe album from the 10,000 Maniacs. Yeah.
And I was only 16, and I'd never heard anything so beautiful in my life, and I did faint. So it's kind of the
story. Has that happened since? The Sight of Beauty, Sound of Beauty?
It hasn't happened since. So I just kind of wondered how you kind of wrote and produced that song. So that's kind of why I'm asking.
I wrote that song when I was really young, probably 20, about a trip I took to Europe. And I wrote it about a fictitious man in the next room.
Room 119.
Who was listening to opera, who I never laid eyes on. But he drove me insane. And I thought that I would immortalize him.
Coincidentally, it is one of my favourite songs of your repertoire. And I did ask you, before we sat down to record this programme, can you play Verdi Cries? And you can't tell. I mean, you just can't remember. If you put your fingers on the keyboard, you wouldn't know where it started.
This is the challenge?
Yeah.
I thought I was going to sing Walk Away, Renee, or something like that. That's the introduction. I just remembered that. That's the first chord of the verse.
The man in 119 takes his...
I have no idea.
T all alone.
No, the chords. I know the words.
The man in 119 takes his tea all alone. Mornings we all rise to our last fairy cries. I'm here in opera.
I assume it goes to another chord here. I don't know which one. There. I remembered it.
And I'm pleased to say that Louise Searle is still sitting upright. She managed not to faint through that rendition of the song.
She's a big girl.
Coincidentally,
now.
Just before you pass that microphone away, sitting just alongside Louise is the producer Joe Boyd, who worked with Fairport Convention and Nick Drake and REM, and who I think, Joe, I'm right in saying, produced the first full 10,000 Maniacs album, which was The Wishing Chair in London. And what are your memories, Joe, of working with Natalie then?
Well, they'd actually made an album before independently.
Thanks for
in
setting
America.
That straight, Joe.
And John Peel loved the album, and he called me up. And he said, you got to hear this record. I think they're a group that you should produce or something like that. So I bought the album and I had started my label, Hannibal, and I wanted to license it. And by the time I met the group, they'd already decided to sign with Elektra. And so I was a bit crestfallen. And then I got this very nice phone call saying, would I produce the group for Elektra? And it was great. It was very different. The group and Natalie were like two different worlds, sort of. I remember I went to Jamestown to discuss repertoire. I remember it was a very snowy night, coming through the drifts and knocking on Natalie's door. And
I entering, still lived with my mom.
I was so delighted to see Sandy Denny and Nick Drake records, you know, in her collection. And the guys were completely different. I talked sports with them. They were big sports fans. Natalie wasn't.
You took me to see the Queen's Park Rangers.
Rangers, I did. That's true.
Really?
And Arsenal.
Who won? Can you remember the score?
Oh, well, Queen's Park Rangers never won back then.
They still don't.
But, Joe, we have the privilege here of hearing Natalie sing in a studio. So for you as a producer, what was the appeal of her voice, of capturing on tape what we've been hearing?
Well, it's a revelation for me to realize that some of those wonderful crescendo high notes and the power that Natalie has all comes from Petula Clark. You know, I'd never realized that until now. No, I mean, that was, in a way, the thing that was most interesting was that, you know, we did the tracks probably too easily, but then spent a lot of time, Natalie and I, working on vocals. And Natalie was so determined and so fiercely applied to getting a really, really great vocal delivery on those tracks. And that was the stimulating and great part of the experience.
Thanks very much to Joe Boyd. That's all we've time for in this edition of Master Tapes. Thanks to our audience here at the BBC Studios in Maida Vale. Thanks for all your questions. Most of all, thanks to Natalie Merchant. Don't forget the Master Tapes page is on the Radio 4 website. You can download today's programme as well as the rest of the series. There's also exclusive content, including full versions of the songs played live here at Maida Vale and videos of some of our Master Tapes guests. And you can tweet us using the hashtag Master Tapes. But we leave you for now with Natalie Merchant playing us out with River.
Young and strong, Hollywood sound. In the early morning light, the star fell down on Sunset Boulevard.
Remember, you can find the full version of this and other songs recorded during our live sessions on the Master Tapes pages at the Radio 4 website, along with photographs, videos, and the other editions of the series. Was torn.